history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you that no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that really ought to be told, because it's important for the rest of us to hear them. I think you're going to enjoy the unique life story you hear from a 100-year-old veteran we have the privilege of meeting today. The idea here is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, we always come out ahead. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Our guest today is Marshall Soria of Fresno, California, who turned 100 years old on July 3rd. He was born in Mexico, raised in Wasco, California, and he's been through quite a bit in his life. A family tragedy before he was even born. Living through the Great Depression, working in the fields before he even reached his teens. Becoming a high school track star and competing at the same track where he witnessed Olympian Louis Zamperini set a record, not to mention the greatest pole vaulter of the 20th century. Marshall's service in World War II with the 28th Infantry Division is how he eventually earned his citizenship. And there were a couple twists of fate along the way that his nearly 100 descendants, yes, nearly 100 descendants, are very thankful for. We're going to start, of course, with his childhood, and I always ask veterans how many siblings they had, but in Mr. Soria's case, there are multiple layers to that answer.
Two brothers and three sisters. See, what happened when we came in from Mexico in 1922, my mom had lost three girls and one boy to the epidemic in 1919.
The Spanish flu?
The Spanish flu. That's why I was born at 20. That's when they decided to come to the United States. So we came in 1922.
Wow.
June the 22nd, 1922, when I came over. Arvin and Bakersfield around there. Then we went to Wasco. My dad was working for the Hoover Farms. President Hoover, he had a farm there, a fruit farm. And he was an irrigator for in Kern County.
So I'm clear. So your parents had four children that died in the Spanish flu epidemic?
Yeah, four that died.
Wow. You come to America as a two-year-old. What are your memories of growing up in Wasco? What was life like back then in the 1920s?
Well, it was all right until we hit that depression. That really hit everybody. And the wages was low and everything. Work was very scarce.
Well, for a big family like yours, that had to make things difficult. What do you remember about those years?
Well, I was still young because I started working when I was 10 years old. But when the Depression hit, that Dust Bowl, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and all that, and that was something to see. I was about 12, 13 years old, but you could see when we went to Bakersfield, we used to see the kids that were coming up to the with a tow truck full of their equipment, whatever they had, and the poor kids running around the fire without shoes in December. It was something to see. We were back on it, but they were worse. Because they didn't have a place that was just coming in. That's the way it was that time.
Do you remember having any ambitions, some dreams or hopes when you were a boy that you'd say, hey, when I grow up, here's what I'm going to do?
Well, they came after working in the field. After working in the field, nothing. Didn't nothing for it? Cotton, half a cent for a pound of you only could pick, a good picker only picked 500 pounds. The poor guys couldn't pick 100.
So you were picking cotton as a boy?
When we used to go out of school, we used to go in and pick cotton. And then the crooked guys come in there. There were a lot of crooked guys, and they still are. And he had a double scale. So he put his scale when the inspector was there. He took his scale off when the inspector was there. Huh? He said, oh, something wrong with my scale. I got to change the thing and put the good scale in. Boy, you go over there, you have 15 pounds. Maybe he was taking 2 or 3 pounds out of every time you went in there. Figure it out, and 15 times you go over there, you lost 15, 20 pounds. Mm-hmm. And paying the half, I said, what the heck? There were the guys getting rich. That's the thing happened all the time.
So Is that something that made you think, hey, I don't want to be doing this kind of work my whole life?
When I came out of school, I could go to school. My dad, that was the first thing my dad used to say, you better go to school. No, Dad, I don't need no more school. You know how a guy is when young.
Well, let's talk about school, because you were quite an athlete in high school at Wasco High. When did you realize that you were pretty good in running?
When we went to high school, because I went to high school, we came out of eighth grade, and that's when I started running.
What was your signature event?
Well, the 3K was the best I can, because I put a record in, and it's hold on for 30 years.
You had the record for 30 years in the 330-yard dash?
330 dash.
Uh-huh.
And that, I went to West Coast Relays, I went to Worcester Relays, and then when I was coached twice, it was a nice coach. After I got out of school, and I had a chance, but what the heck, the guy's young, you know.
So you could have run track in college?
Oh, yeah.
If you wanted to.
If I could have.
But you decided not to. But West Coast Relays and Modesto Relays, back then, those were really big events. People were coming from everywhere to compete in.
Yeah. Symphorini broke the record there, and that year we came in when we still relayed. Cornelius Wilmer then broke the pole vault record.
So is this 1938? Is that when that would have been?
Yeah. 1938.
Cornelius Warmerdam from Hanford.
Yeah, Mr. That guy from UCLA. Then I heard that he was blown up in an airplane over there.
Yeah, so Warmerdam did 15 feet on a bamboo pole.
Yeah.
But Louis Zamperini, who would run in the 1936 Olympics,
yeah,
had been competing for USC. He ends up going in the Army Air Corps. He's the subject of the book Unbroken.
Yeah.
And people have heard him here on this radio show on Hometown Heroes. So you saw those guys at the West Coast Relays.
Yeah, when they broke the record.
You ran on the same track that Zamperini ran on.
Yeah, same track in the new stadium there. That was a new stadium then at that time.
That sounds like that was an exciting moment.
It was. It was. Never been out of that little town.
And your school, Wasco, won the small schools championship there?
Yeah.
So your father wanted you to go to college.
Oh, yeah. He wanted me to go to school.
And you said, no, I know better.
He always wanted me to go to college.
You decided to work in the fields instead?
Well, that's all we had.
Yep.
I didn't know what the hell you turned to. Then when you worked, you had to turn your butt off, especially when you're thinning beets. You have to go in your back. You have to thin them 4 inches apart for miles. And they only pay you 69 cents an acre. You wouldn't even make an acre. And that was over. And then you have to plant the onions by with your finger. You have to carry a big bag of onions and you plant it up. Then I came to pick grapes in Delano. They have the farms. Sierra Vista has a farm, and the Japanese had their farms, and they all had their farms. But the Mexican guys had their own farm. Everybody had the same thing. They pay you every 15 days. You were 19, 20 years old. You wanted money in a weekend to go to the show, go nothing. You tell that guy, lend me some money. Had to wait 2 weeks. You got to wait 2 weeks. Well, I'll lend you some at 10% discount. And then they lend us the money, and they didn't give us no money. They gave us them coins. They were making all the money over there. They were making over here. People didn't understand that dancing. Huh? Mm-hmm. When this Chavez came in, he didn't go after them guys. They went after the farmers. And they're still in there. They're still. And they claim that he done it. Well, to me, he didn't do a good job. All he did to me, all he did was put the toilet in the field. That's all. Yeah.
Did you ever meet him?
No, I didn't meet him because the time he was there, he didn't work about a year or so. He went to the Navy.
Yeah.
And then they took, some company from Chicago came in and picked him up, teaching the ropes of unionizing and all that.
Yeah.
That's when he came back and started all this junk. But he went after the farmers.
Let me ask you about December 7th, 1941, because everybody seems to remember how they heard about Pearl Harbor. Do you remember how you found out what you were doing or where you were?
Well, I was in church. We were coming out of church.
Yeah. In Wasco?
Yeah. Coming out of church, the news started gathering over there. It's bound Pearl Harbor, bound Pearl Harbor. And all the kids got excited. Some guys, well, I'm going to enlist them. Rumors started going enlisting right away. Then the draft came in. The draft started coming in, and they started picking them. We used to know when we were going to school, we passed by the draft office. Some of the guys were there. There were no more guys. Where's so and so? Well, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's gone. Where's so-and-so? Oh, he's gone. I started going to a little bit of a person. It was, when I went up, I was about the only guy. I said, what the hell am I doing down here now? Well, my brother was only 19. He got called. He was winning 43.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, what the hell? I got married. So, you know, I thought, I want to go enlist in the Army. Good thing I did. This way I got my citizenship papers.
Yeah.
And they carried me on through all the way. Went to the Army. Went to Camp Roberts. I played too in Camp Roberts. That's the hot place, man. You're thinking about hot. That's hot. So we were in the East Garrison, and we had to go across the bridge and the other side. Every morning, hiking and all this. Hot or cold, every morning. Good thing we went in July.
So something I want to make sure I clarify with you. You said your brother went in. He was 19, but he had been born here in the States.
Yeah, he was born here in the States. He was born after we got here in the States.
But you were born in Mexico.
I was born in Mexico.
So you still weren't a citizen.
No.
Is that one of the reasons you decided to join the Army?
Mostly it was when they deferred me, because they drafted me in 42 to go South Pacific. But they told me, turn me down. They said, no, you're not a citizen. We can accept you. Then they deferred me. They deferred me because I was working for this company, and I was their foreman and doing all the things that they were. That's a big farm. It was a nice work to go work for. It was a steady job and everything. But it got to the point, well, you have to work tomorrow. Well, I've been working all month long. I'm going to take a day off. Well, if you don't want me to turn you in. And I got tired of that. One day I told him, the hell with you guys. I'm going to turn myself off. Hey, you don't have to turn me. I'll turn myself in. That's the way I got out of there and went to the Army.
So I want to make sure again that I'm understanding it right. So when they drafted you, they didn't know that you weren't a citizen?
No, that's why they didn't accept me, because I was not a citizen.
But they did draft you? It wasn't you trying to enlist?
No, I was drafted.
Uh-huh. But then you told them I'm not a citizen? And
yeah, they find out right there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're not a citizen. Uh-huh. So that's when they deferred me to the deferment for the... And then all the guys that were left, the 4Fs, you know, that were left. And when I seen all the guys, they're all gone. And right now, they're all dead.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I went enlisted. When we finished that training, we were warned to go into the Pacific.
Hey, I have one more question about the deferment situation. Am I understanding correctly that you could have kept the deferment? You didn't have to go.
I didn't have to go, no.
You could have stayed there
working yeah.
on the ranch?
Yeah.
So what was that motivation? What told you this is what I need to do at this point? Why did you join the Army?
Well, I can't be there all the time. I knew sometimes I got to get out of here.
Even though you'd be risking your life?
Yeah.
So you join the Army. You're training at Camp Roberts. You're thinking you're going to go to the Pacific. What changed? How'd you find out that's not what was happening?
We didn't find out until December. That we weren't finished. That uh-huh. they gave us the clothes for the South Pacific, for Europe. They had khakis and we had the warm equipment.
So I got to ask you something else. Sorry, I know we're bouncing around here. Did you say you got married before that?
Yeah, married in 43.
So you've been married for a year when you signed up for the Army?
Yeah.
How'd your wife feel about that?
She didn't like it.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah. Well, the reason she didn't like it because we had just lost the twins.
Mm.
We married in 43 and 44, and maybe she lost twins. Miscarriage. Everything going wrong. Well, I said, maybe if I go, I go. If I get killed, well, at least you get
life insurance.
Insurance. Mm. Get your insurance. But it turned out all right, even if we went through it. We had rough training, but good thing we did.
So you just told me, you know, you thought, even if I get killed, then at least she'll have this money. So you were thinking, there's a chance I might not come back.
Oh, yeah. We didn't. Because they used to tell us when we were in the boat, they said, you guys ain't coming. We didn't know that the bout was going on.
Mm-hmm.
It was starting when we were going over there. Because I took all my training in August. And it was August, no, July, August, September, and October. And we finished in November the 16th. We graduated.
And he had no idea what he'd be facing over the next year. We'll find out from 100-year-old Marshall Soria when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myEECU.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.